accession number 26527, rail 4.
Mr. Holness, rail 4. We're talking about this convoy you were on to St. John's, Newfoundland.
It turned out it wasn't St. John's after all. We went to Argentia, which was just around the corner. But the main thing about that, it gave us a chance to restock all our goods that we'd missed since we left America. But after leaving, we only stayed there.
What type of thing did you stock up on it?
Well, the natty ration and things like that, wasn't it? Anything we wanted, you know. And then, of course, there's fresh bread and everything that we took on all the stores we could in that sense. We'll say that about the officers. They really thought about getting stuff in to suit the crew as well, you see.
Now, what type of messing system did you have, and what was the food like?
We had the general messing, and the food was...
Now, what did that mean? Because people don't understand now what general messing means.
Well, like living at home, I say. Almost the same as being in barracks, really. The food was there, the same, just dished up the same.
But who cooked it?
We had two chefs aboard. They even baked bread. They did everything. Fortunately, being an American ship, they had a special galley which did this sort of thing, which we don't have on the British ships, apparently. So that was quite helpful. We had fresh, so when our bread, what we'd bought aboard, ran out, we had fresh supplies baked, which were very good, yeah.
So how did you get the food from the galley to, where did you eat it?
In your own mess deck. Each mess deck had its own table.
So who'd fetch it?
We had a cook of the mess appointed every day.
But the cook of the mess didn't cook, they just
fetched
it?
They didn't cook, they just fetched it and cleared up afterwards.
Now, what kind of food did they serve up to you, if you remember, you know, or was it...?
The food was home food. It's generally the same as what you would get at home. There's no distinction, really.
It was as good as what you'd be used to at home?
Well, it might not have tasted quite as good, but it was there and the right sort.
And was there enough of it?
Yes, plenty. There was plenty.
Any special meals they had, or any or was it just really bog standard food?
I don't know. Everything was there we seemed to have wanted. We never had to complain about it. We never complained about our food on the Paisley at all.
Did you get Kai or cocoa?
Kai. Well, we started with Kai, but we had it changed to soup. And like most ships.
Now, why was that?
Well, we wasn't struck on the Kai that was being dished out. That's one thing that we weren't keen on. It was too greasy or something. So we had a lot of oil and sunny flavours on top of it.
Well, it's a chocolate drink. It's a hot chocolate thing.
No. I suppose it is it? I don't know. Yeah, maybe I suppose it would be chocolate, yeah. Chocolate block, isn't it? But...
You didn't like it?
Well, we had a little vote on it on the ship, and... the officers and all, they decided they'd like to try soup, and we changed the soup and tried it, and we liked it, and we stayed on it. So, really, right from the beginning, we had the soup on board, basically.
Now, what about the rum ration? Tell me about that.
Well, of course, you had to be old enough to have it, didn't you? GT or UA, grog, temperance, or underage. So, if you didn't draw it, you got threepence a day.
Now, did you draw yours or not?
Not at first. I had it occasionally afterwards, and then stopped it again, but I wasn't a rum drinker, really.
Why not? Did you not like the taste?
No, I don't think I did like the taste when I think about it, because I never drink it now anyway, so. But there was an odd occasion where I had to drop. Yeah.
Could you decide each time, or did you have to...
No, you just put a little chit in. Could you change it, and then they'd alter your pay accordingly. If you didn't have it, they'd say, give you threepence a day, put it in your pay.
So you could only change it occasionally,
Between trips, if you want to, you know. Yeah, you couldn't change it every day.
How was it issued, do you remember?
Yeah, it's similar to what you see the routine on these, wherever you've seen a rum ration issued, in a barrel and or in the drum, and measured out in the tot, and everybody had the tot that wanted it. Sometimes, and you gave sippers, which was a little sip to the chap dishing it out, and he'd had quite enough time he finished. But each head of the mess went and got their own ration for that mess.
Would they have sippers for birthdays and things like that on your ship?
Yeah, and gulpers.
Gulpers?
Yeah, you imagine what that is, can't you? Yeah. I had my 21st birthday at sea.
How drunk
were you? And I kept my afternoon watch. You know, I had some drop of rum that day. And I kept my afternoon watch that day, I remember. Yeah.
Now, how did the crew get on generally? I mean, what were relationships like on your mess deck? I mean...
No problems. I've been very fortunate in my Navy life. No problems with... mistake, trouble or anything.
It sounds like a happy ship. Can you tell me what made it a happy ship? Was it the officers? Was it the the petty officer, or was it the men? What made the Baisley a happy ship?
We were a good team. Everybody worked for the ship. And
who do you think was responsible that you were a good team? Do you see what I mean? Someone must have been.
It must have been, yeah, but who?
It just worked.
You all had a job to do and you did that job, and it all fused in somehow, and nobody worried about anybody else doing something. You all became mates. Yeah, we were a good ship.
Was humour very important? There's a couple of things you've said. I mean, you talk about Baisley jokes and things. I mean, was humour important on the ship?
It was. We had our laughs and moments, I suppose. I remember one occasion about some soup. She came out dished up in the big fannies to each mess deck. A fanny being a big dish, so a big container. I was sitting at the table there, and I was on a long bench at the table, and I remember swinging my foot over behind me, over the seat, and I put it straight in a fanny of soup. Nobody would drink it after that. They all laughed. I had to go to the hospital with it.
Oh, you were burnt.
I was treated. That's a messed up humour, I don't know. They laughed.
Now, what's the next step? So you went to Argentia.
Argentia, yeah.
Argentia. What happened after that?
Well, we came back with a quite straightforward convoy, actually. No trouble at all, fortunately.
Now, what would happen in... What was Pollock Dock like as a base for you?
Great.
What was so good about it?
I was courting my wife in Belfast.
Right from the start?
All within a month of going there.
How did you meet her? Tell us.
We used to go out for an evening out, and she worked in a milk bar. We used to go there for coffee. That was it, yeah. And I was been going with her ever since. Got married in 1946.
So after the war?
After the war.
Mm. Did you decide to wait deliberately, or was
it
just
the way it worked out, really.
And how did you get on with the Irish generally?
Good. Very good. They still ring me up now. Make sure I'm here, I think. No, we all got on well over in Ireland. We all had.
There was no trouble about Protestants and Catholics as far as you were concerned?
Never mentioned. We even had one, two Irish in the crew. Yeah, no trouble at all.
So what's the next thing that happened that you remember?
From there, our next trip out was another convoy. 74 ships down to West Africa, and the speed of the convoy was 4 knots. It took us 3 weeks.
That sounds very slow.
That was the slowest ship. 74 ships. Yeah, and that's took us 3 weeks to get down there.
What was that like?
Argentia.
No. No, the trip.
The trip was all right. No hassle to speak of. It's quiet going down.
No attacks.
No attacks going down. Well, I think we had a few contacts, but nothing to sort of speak of in that sense. We've actually came back with another convoy. Was an attack coming back. We chased one sub, I remember, that was on the surface, but then we lost it, and we were ordered to withdraw, rejoin the convoy, and request permission to clear the gun, pull out a star shell in it. And when we fired it, it showed up the submarine sitting ahead of us, and we went in as one of the subs we caught. Us and Drury joined in. And
what did you see of it? Where were you? You were on the bridge?
I was on the bridge, and it was there, and then gone, because they went straight down. But that was one of the subs we actually got.
Would the whole ship be... I mean, was that a great moment?
When you know you've succeeded in something, yeah. But sometimes you don't know till afterwards, you see. Later on, quite some time after some of them.
Would you fly the
bullship pennant?
What do you mean by that?
Well, what was you going to say first? The one I'm talking about, we only flew when you went into harbour, when you knew you'd sunk a ship.
So. Now, what was that, the bullshit pennant? What was it?
Well, it's one we made up for ourselves. It had various things on it. you put a submarine on it if you sunk a submarine, and I can't remember what else was on it. It was quite a big flag, I remember that.
And the crew made it up themselves?
Yeah, we made it, the signals.
The signals made it?
Yeah.
Would you make a different one each time, or was it the
same? No, same one. If you sunk a sub, you put the sub on it. We had three on ours, you see. And we had the air attack.
West Africa.
Dakar. We went to. Coming back from Dakar, was where we was attacked by the. No, it wasn't. Big pardon.
I think that was in the Bay of Biscay.
Bay of Biscay. Yeah. Well, we went through the Bay of Biscay anyway, didn't we?
But that wasn't the same time.
No, on the way back, convoy was attacked, and it was one ship hit. One called the Warfield.
The what?
Warfield.
What happened?
Merchant ship. Well, it had been hit by a torpedo and on fire, and we were detailed to go back, see if we could do anything to help it, because the convoy carried on, naturally. And the rescue boat was there, every convoy had a rescue boat at the back. That joined in as well, but we were detailed to sink it, because it was a floating hazard, because they'd taken the crew off. So we went, we only had 3-inch guns on this American ship, and we couldn't hit it.
Couldn't hit it.
So the captain said, well, the only one thing we could do is depth charge it. He said, we go by and depth charge it. So we went by and we fired these depth charges, and whatever happened to them, they must have gone off, but didn't sink the ship. But in the meantime, the convoy was under attack again, so we was asked to go and rejoin the convoy. We were quite a few miles further on, when all of a sudden there was this massive explosion behind us. And it was the Warfield going up. So at that stage, they thought, well, we'd better have a look at the convoy form, see what was in it. And it was ammunition carrying.
So when you depth charged it, you could have blown yourselves up?
Yeah. Nobody thought to look, see what was carrying. So anyway, it sunk it anyway.
Anything else happened on that trip?
I think it was quite quiet after that.
Now, round about this time, you should have had.
Tend to get one too many trips.
Don't worry. They can sort that. The historians can sort that out.
Yeah.
It's 60 years ago. Now, you're bound to get a bit muddled. Mm. Now, it's around about this time the Calder joins your escort group, I presume.
We've had one or two changes in there, but the Calder was there, and I think Calder was with us most of the time. The group had quite a few changes because the Blackwood went off and. To D-Day,
that's a bit later.
I mean, that went off, left us. The Berry was with us, that left us originally. Quite a few changes. Pasley, Bainton, all that, they changed and joined us. But we were there, us and the Drury and the Bentinck were there all the time, right from the beginning.
Now, do you remember any of the other convoys before we get to the big convoy in the Bay of Biscay where there's a lot of trouble that time? When you joined with another escort group too?
I'm trying to think in the periods of time, but it's
so the next thing would be when you weren't on a support group. You weren't actually the escort, we were supporting.
That's right.
Now tell me about this, because this is quite a big. I don't know whether much happened to your ship in it, but if you tell us what you remember of it.
Well, basically, all we remember is we were ordered to go to support this group through the Bay of Biscay, and we were warned there may be a. Attack from the air, and the introduction of we were warned beforehand that there may be introduction of flying bombs or flying whatever you call them, and we went picked them up. I've got the date somewhere, but we picked the convoy up, and we hadn't been there long when our group actually did come under attack.
Well, what do you remember? What did you see? Cause were you on the bridge?
I was. I can remember seeing the planes flying round the horizon, and we'd been warned that the bomb, when they released it, would have a light on it, and you could follow the light. As soon as the light went out, duck. But we saw the one come over, and it landed. I think it must have been near the Drury. I can't remember which one it was on. One landed very near one of our ships. I think it was the Drury. But apart from that, it didn't didn't touch us at all, but it was quite frightening at the time to know that this was going on. They were coming in from different directions, and we did take a voyage in action on one occasion, because the skipper was sitting on the it wasn't Commander Brockpoint there at the time, it was Lieutenant Commander Cooper, R&R, Jack Winston Cooper.
Brock hadn't stayed long then?
No, he was transferred back to the Australian Navy or something. He took over a group of his own.
So anything else about this time as support group?
Yeah, but what I was going to say was the officer was sitting on the captain's chair on the bridge, and he was watching one of these bombs come over, and he did take a void in action, and he just sat there in the last minute, starboard, hard starboard and things like that, gave the orders necessary to dodge any possible chance of a hit. So whether we would have been hit, I don't know, but he gave quite a few orders at that time.
That was Commander Cooper, Lieutenant
Commander Cooper, R&R.
What did you think of Lieutenant Cooper?
He was a vicar's son, funny enough. From Hucknall.
And what was he like?
Telephone number 33. he was all right. He'd, apparently, we understand that he'd lost his previous ship by ramming a submarine. And we was the next one he joined. So we didn't know what to expect from him. He was only a little man, but he was... I think he must have known his job, but we didn't know much about him, really.
Was he more approachable than Brock had been?
Well, he was around more, but he was still captain. I mean, captain to keep their place, didn't they?
Big distance, then.
He was distance, but he was around more, and you could sort of... I don't know, he was more with you than what...
Speak to you? I mean, because Brock spoke to you once.
Yeah, it was a little acknowledgement, but not too much. they all got their bit of distance, you know, from the officers, especially the captains. I think they're told to do this, aren't they? Yeah. But he was all right. Just one thing about him, his wife was expecting a baby at the time. And when we went into harbour in Belfast, the first thing we had to do was make a signal, Hucknall 33 knots, has it popped yet? And that was a standard signal for two or three trips from him, yeah. That's how I know his numbers so well.
Now, what happened after the glider bomb? Was there anything else you remember about that? This is in November 1943.
Yeah, well, we needed to refuel, and for that we went to the Azores, which was very nice because it gave us all a chance to get pineapples and anything else I was going to bring home, which are things we hadn't seen for many years. I do remember them when I got home with them. We put in the shop windows in the town. It was an exhibition from people to see. A lot of people hadn't seen them at that time. But it was only a short visit, a couple of days, and I'd be off again. And on patrol, back on the patrol with the...
We've got two stories you told me off tape about your times on leave. Can you tell us them? One was about a trip in a boat, and the other was about a mine. Should take the one about the boat first.
When I was home on leave, I very often went out with my father trawling or fishing, whatever he was doing at that time, because they still carried on during the war. And this particular occasion, we went out trawling, and when getting trawl ready to drop, we saw something floating in the water. Going to have a look at it, as you did in those days, because you never know what you're going to find. We could see that there was a body floating, and you could just see the body part of it. So I asked my father, well, what would we do in that case? Because it had to be taken on board or something, obviously, but it was too heavy to lift. We did try to do that. So he said, well, I don't want to miss the tide trawling. He said, I can't afford to do that. We'd take it in tow. And so he tied it on the stern and dropped the trawl, and away we went. And the faster we went, I'm sorry to say, you could see the legs floating up, and it was... quite sad in a sense, because we knew it was an airman of some kind, and we needed to do something about it. But we took the full distance of the trawl down to Recolvers, which is about 3 miles from Herne Bay, and took it ashore there to the Coast Guard station.
Was it a British or a German?
And it turned out at that stage to be a German airman, and a line of bullets, you could see a line of bullets across his back. But we never found out any more about him, only they took him in charge and we went out and carried on with our fishing.
Another story you have about a mine. Can you tell that? Because that's got
This was on another occasion when I was home on leave. A friend of my father's, one of the locals, who's a bit of a scavenger on the beaches or whatever he could do, he said, "Frank, I've found a nice boy that would do the boat on the beach." He said, "I was about to bring any home from the beach. What have you done with it?" He said, "I'll take it around my house." He says, "In the back garden." He said, "Could you tell me what it's like?" He said, "It was nice, boyish, nice ring bolts on the end," he said, and we thought it would be handy. So he said, "Well, I'd better come in and have a look at it because it doesn't sound right to me." So we went round to his house, which was a little terrace house in the middle of the town. No side entrances, back gardens, and they had a small back garden. So we went through to have a look at it, and it turned out to be a German acoustic mine he had, about 3 feet long, pear-shaped. And my father said the appropriate words, and you've got a mine there. So he said, "Well, we can't leave it here in the middle of the town like that. It's dangerous." So I said, "Well, what can you do about it?" He said, "Well, we can't evacuate, get the area evacuated, anything like that." So he said, "We'll take it down to this wasteland at down near the seafront, what we call the Dolphin Yard in those days." And between us, my father one end and me the other, we carried it back through the house, down through the centre of the town about midday, and took it down to this Dolphin Yard in the middle of the town. It was quite a big, vast area, so it wouldn't have done so much damage down there.
Didn't people see you going through the town?
Well, we covered it with a coat to make it so it wasn't obvious. Not many people possibly would have recognised it, but there wasn't too many people about those days walking about, as you see now. We took it down to the Dolphin Yard, and Father, being on the Coast Guard service, he notified the police, and they contacted Chatham and sent a bomb disposal squad down to dismantle it. But no harm was done, fortunately. But on the end of that, Ginger Malin, the chap that found it, took it off the beach. He was actually taken to court for doing that, for removing items from the shore, which he shouldn't do. And he was probably fined. And the next thing I know, my father had paid his fine for him because he couldn't get out of money. That's what my father was like.
Any other stories of your time on leave, or is that about it?
Only on a visit to Canterbury when I went to see a film over there, Gone with the Wind, which had just been produced. And that was the one occasion when, or the first occasion of daylight bombing in Canterbury on that day. And when I came out, the bombing started. And I'd fortunately gone a couple of roads back to Waterham Bay in those days, and the bombing was on the other side of the town, so I actually missed it, but I was there at the occasion.
Now, what's the next thing that happened? Would the next thing be this gold run? Can you tell us about that?
At the time, I didn't know about this, but we were a bit suspicious because before we were to leave on the next trip out, there's quite a guard of lorries pulled up and police and loaded us with something on the ship, which we didn't know what it was at the time. But we went on that voyage down to Mediterranean, and quite uneventful going down. We went down with a convoy, one of the fast convoys going down there, but we had to stop at Algiers. And we went in there, and there again, total security, because it was all to do with this load we were carrying. And this turned out to be 200 bars of gold bullion, which was being transferred to Africa.
When did you find that out about that?
Not till after it was unloaded. That's the first inkling we had of it. We knew it was something special, but we didn't know what it was. Since then, I've heard that it had to be counted off, and when they got to 199, they found it seemed to be one short, but as it had taken a lot of time and a lot of work, they decided that was near enough. So we never did know if it was a bar of gold missing or not. And this is reflected in a story I had from our first lieutenant.
Now, the next big thing would be what they call the Millionaire's Run, these fast convoys through the Mediterranean.
Our group was detailed a job of taking troop convoys, liners. There was all the recognised liners of the day, and we usually had about ending up to a 17-ship convoy with these, but they're all fast convoys, what we call fast. Probably the minimum speed was about 20 knots, which was quite a good speed for a convoy. And this was from December 43 to October 44. And as we did about one a month, that was eight convoys we must have done on this run. And we'd never had any action, actually. We used to have dawn and dusk action stations going through the Med and escort for carriers and everything you can imagine. But we never had any actual bother with these fast convoys because they were, being fast, their job for something to keep up with in those days.
Now, what I should have asked before, what was your action station? Was it on the bridge?
Mine was, yeah. Well, we were spread through the ship. So that if anything happened, there was always a signal available somewhere, possibly.
But you were the one on the bridge?
Yeah, with the Yeoman, yeah.
So what do you remember? What would a typical sort of trip to... It was to Naples, mostly, wasn't it?
These trips were to Naples. We dropped one or two off on the way. Sometimes one or two of them were picked up from us at Gibraltar and they went on down to Africa. But the main body of it, we were taking up to Naples. And this was... Directly after Naples was relieved, we were taking the first troop convoys in. And eight times we went down there, and each time we did the same run, same number of troops. So there must have been a vast quantity of movement from us, you know, going down. We, on these occasions in Naples, we used to get a run ashore for about 3 or 4 days. Get a few bits. We all get our photos taken with the local photographers, but we never paid for anything. It was all the done with the tins of sardines or whatever we had left over in the mess.
What was it like ashore?
It was very, very good, actually. They didn't do much for us there because the Germans had only just gone and they were a bit wary of us. But their main object was trying to get money out of us or give them something. That was the Italians, but they didn't seem too bad. About one occasion we went in there when we tied up alongside, we had some trainee seamen aboard from Belfast. They put us aboard for experience. And when the heaving line was cast over to him to tie the ship up alongside, because the Italian doctors in those days wouldn't help us or take a line or anything, he tied the ship up with the heaving line instead of taking the main line in. And then imagine what the captain said over the bridge. He called him some funny names, I'm afraid. But also while we was there, and this was the last occasion of this, we had a group regatta, a ship's regatta at Pozzuoli, which is just outside of Naples Bay. And
What do you remember of that?
I can remember that all the different races were three at seamen, communications, whatever branch it was in. There was a There were six ships in the group, and we all entered a crew. And we had a run of bookies on it, and this was handled by jury. And his code name at that time was Wookie on the call signs. And so we called him Wookie the Bookie, or Wookie the Wookie. And when he paid out the odds at the end, we didn't know because we did our own betting on the ship that they settled up afterwards. But he paid double the odds by mistake, and they couldn't get it back. But this didn't come to note till we've gone back to sea again. Although they'd all spent their money by then. But I'm pleased to say that Baisley was the winner overall.
You weren't in any of the ships? Races?
I was in the communication one, but yeah. We came third in ours. Out the six.
What sort of races were they? Can you tell us about them?
Whalers races. That's all we carried, the whaler, and everyone ride their whaler, and that was what the races were. No sail, not sailing. It's all pulling. But Baisley did well. Overall, we took the overall prize.
Was there much of a black market going on in Naples? Were you aware?
Well,
there
must
that?
Have been, but we weren't too aware of anything like that because we weren't there long enough to get into it, you know.
And what were these trips like? Were they easy trips, or what did you think of them?
Well, to us, they became a bit of a holiday. Well, we were going down through the Med, sunbathing, and when he was off watch, he just